Miss Nelson was my first grade teacher, and I loved her. She was young and tall and had a kind, round face with big, brown, widely spaced eyes and long, dark hair that she wore braided and coiled around her head. Every morning in the classroom, we'd start by sitting in a circle, and Miss Nelson would tell us these new and interesting, fascinating things. She spoke with a kind voice, and I was just enraptured. One morning early in the school year, she told us that she lived in El Monte with her horses. I lived and went to school in a different suburb of Los Angeles that was near El Monte, but it was a new subdivision, a lot of tract houses, half a dozen different floor plans, and every house had one little tiny tree planted in the front yard. Some families had a dog, maybe a cat. And I think that El Monte now is kind of a gritty community where rental RVs are easy to come by. But at the time, El Monte seemed like a magical place where wondrous beings like Miss Nelson lived with horses. Horses, she might as well have said unicorns. I didn't know the term teacher's pet at the time, but that was clearly what I wanted to be. I wanted her to prefer me to all the other 6-year-olds in the class. I wanted her special attention. I wanted her to think that I was unique and worthy and admirable. But I had no idea how to make that happen. I hadn't learned anything relevant in nursery school or kindergarten. And I hadn't managed to distinguish myself at home either. I don't pretend to any expertise about the psychological impact of birth order, but I can tell you my family dynamic went something like this. In year one, my sister was born. There was great rejoicing. She's a healthy, beautiful baby girl, their firstborn daughter. In year two, I was born. Okay, fine, another girl. In year three, there was a miscarriage and a lot of sorrow. In year four, my brother was born. Hooray, a healthy, strapping son, a beautiful boy. And then 2 years later, the twins were born, and they were both boys. And that was also very exciting, except I think at this point, my parents' exhaustion might have started to outweigh the joy they felt in their offspring. Which is understandable. My mother was 26 years old and now had 5 kids under the age of 5. And so, kudos to her for even surviving. But as for me, that second daughter wasn't exactly getting showered with a lot of special love and attention. So off I go to first grade, and I become enraptured with Miss Nelson, and I start to crave her regard. One day, we're in our opening circle, and Miss Nelson starts talking about people with disabilities. Now, this is 1966, so I think the language she used was probably a little outdated, so I might update the terms as I talk about this, and in case you're doing the math, that makes me 54. So there she is, speaking with so much kindness and sympathy about wheelchairs and Down syndrome and birth defects and blindness, and inspiration strikes. And suddenly I knew how to get her attention focused on me. But I was pretty shy, and I wasn't going to speak up, and I wasn't even going to raise my hand, but I stood up, and I walked around the circle to where Miss Nelson was sitting, and I leaned towards her, and I cupped my little hand next to her perfect ear, and I whispered, "My father is blind." Of course, he was not blind. But as I walked back to my place in the circle, I believe I felt her kind, compassionate gaze on me as she said to the class, "Susie's just told me that her father is blind, and that must be so difficult for her and her family." And the rest of the day, I was living the dream. Miss Nelson smiled at me. She checked in with me from time to time, and I was just basking in that glow. And at the end of the day, when the bell rang, Miss Nelson came and got me and walked me out of the classroom holding my hand to help me find my mom in the throng of mothers and children that were in the school courtyard. And when we found my mom, Miss Nelson greeted her, and she said, "I was so sorry to hear about your husband." And Miss Nelson said, "Well, what do you mean?" And I was still reveling in the glories of the day, and I don't think I even remembered why Miss Nelson had been paying me all this attention. So I really had no idea what was about to come crashing down on me. And Miss Nelson said to my mother, "Well, that he's blind." And my mother said, "No, he isn't. What makes you think that?" And Miss Nelson says, "Well, Susie told me so." And here I'd been standing between them, beaming up at these two most beloved women, and they turned and gazed down on me, and there was no admiration or affection in those gazes. It was suspicion, bewilderment, implied demand to explain myself. And the real explanation that I lied about my father's sight because I wanted Miss Nelson's sympathy, and I wanted her to think I was special, and I wanted her precious attention on me. Well, it didn't occur to me that anyone would ever say anything like that. And I didn't even really know, I expect, that's what I was feeling. I mean, I was 6 years old, and how can you expect a six-year-old to really understand, analyze, name, and give language to that kind of emotion? But an explanation was in order, and I must have thought that I could salvage the situation somehow. So I said, "Oh, no, Miss Nelson." I said, "My father's friend was blind." And I think they saw right through that, but they didn't press the point. Even so, I knew even at that age that I was in deep. Well, there's mayhem in the school courtyard, and my mother gathers her brood and gets us all home, and I don't even know how I got through the next couple of hours. I expect now I was in an agony of anxiety over this lie that I had told and been found out on. But again, I didn't know those words, agony and anxiety. So the time passed, and my father came home from work, and as usual, he went into the den to take off his coat and tie and put down his briefcase and sort through the day's mail, and I knew I had to do something. And so I went into the den, and I stood next to him as he was at his desk sorting through these envelopes with his inconveniently fully functioning eyes. And I said, "Dad, when Mom asks you if you have a blind friend, will you just say yes?" And I don't remember his answer, But he wasn't really interested in pursuing this conversation with number two here. And I do know that he didn't bend down to my level and ask me, why would I need him to say that? And he didn't put his hand gently on my shoulder or hug me and ask me why was I so upset. I expect he gave some kind of non-committal reply, and we proceeded with another evening in our full and fairly chaotic household. And I don't know whether my mother even asked him that critical question. And neither of my parents ever, you know, took this incident as a learning moment to talk to me about honesty or the value of authenticity in personal relationships or even not embarrassing them in front of the school teachers. It was a different era in American parenting. And as for Miss Nelson, I lost her. You know, she may have continued to think that I was special, but it was probably not in a good way. I'd gotten in deep with her, and I just had no ability to get myself out. And from then on, the only time I really ever saw the surface was when I allowed myself to daydream and imagine standing in El Monte by Miss Nelson's side, feeding apples to her horses.